like ours, but with a greater intelligence, greater powers, and a greater capacity for good.
Even though you've been raised as a human being, you are not one of them.
Some of the best myths in religion, when we speak of, you know, modern religions from Buddhism, Hinduism to Christianity, they don't really give us any kind of a map of the heavens and what is heaven and where is it and where are the planets that Krishna speaks about in the Hindu Bhagavad Gita. You know, they are talking about very, very far away paradise planets. That's almost like the movie Avatar. But when you're speaking of the Sumerians, you're speaking of, you know, a map of the cosmos that we see locally, that is solar system, and albeit a very accurate map. So we can't ignore it. You can't just say, oh, you know, we have telescopes today and we know everything, and we certainly don't know everything. So I would say, I would bet that Nibiru is, you know, whether it's coming into orbit right now, I mean, as per a lot of your emails, it's hard to get good data from now, you know, different groups who post astronomy, you know, discoveries. So it's really, really hard. But there is, you know, you're posing some very serious data that may point to it actually becoming into our orbit.
Now, you also mentioned on George Norrie's show that on the day of the Gulf oil explosion, there was a massive eruption on the sun. I seen somewhere else that was actually the day prior. What's your confirmation on that?
Well, say that again. Sorry, I don't understand what you're saying.
You said on George Norrie's show that on the day of the Gulf oil explosion out in the Gulf that there was a massive eruption on the sun.
Yeah, I mean there was. I mean, I'm looking at eruptions on the sun, and I'm, you know, basically seeing what the cause and effect of that's going to be. I mean, the simple physics is when you get a huge eruption of electromagnetic energy and plasma, you're going to get a reaction because you're transferring, you know, high-energy electrons, high-energy particles, and then you're transferring heat. So, you know, when the Earth heats up, you're going to get a reaction. The question is, what kind of reactions you get? Are you going to get people who are having emotional meltdowns to, you know, severe weather patterns to earthquakes? And, you know, whether the human error was really intended, it was intentional, or whether there was an eruption underneath the C4 that caused or contributed to the eruption, there are so many factors and there's so much evidence. But the point is, there was an eruption on the sun just hours before the eruption on the Earth, you know, in the Gulf. So I'm not necessarily saying it was the sun. I'm saying that there are a lot of factors that contribute to the event, but now it's looking more and more like this thing might have even been intended. because the blackout on, for example, the toxic rains that are happening all over the country right now. You've got toxic rains in Florida, Texas, as far north as North Dakota, Ontario, Canada. I mean, they're talking about rain that is carrying evaporated fuels and the most toxic, lethal chemicals and raining it down on all of our crops, all of our rivers, all of our streams and lakes. And, you know, the fish are dead in North Dakota in the lake. You know, you can't imagine how far away that is from the Gulf. So the implications of what's happened are, firstly, it happened April 22nd, 2010, and there was an eruption on the sun. But now, if we're ignoring what's really happening, and we're talking about a presidency that is ignoring all the data and all the facts, you have to believe that these people want this to happen. And the ultimate implications of toxic rains all over the eastern United States, from Texas right up the middle to the east, would ultimately mean that people in all of those areas are going to get cancer, you know, either slowly or rapidly, depending on how severe the situation gets. And if they all start dying and they can't eat their food and their crops are all failed, they're going to move west, and then you're going to have an exodus from the country on the eastern seaboard moving to the western, and that's just going to be unimaginable what that means.
There's a slight cutout going in on your end. Is that you have a call waiting there?
No.
Oh, okay.
No. I don't hear a call waiting myself, but
it's just a really slight cutoff when you're talking. I don't know where it's coming from, but
mm-hmm.
Well, yeah, you're right. If there's not massive Gulf evacuations, these people, if they don't die tomorrow, they'll end up dying of cancer is another thing. I do agree with you there.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. I mean, it's really, I've been following all the YouTube videos and on the toxic rain problem, and I've been following the YouTube videos on, you know, what's actually happening in the Gulf. I hate to say it, but YouTube is a better news service because it's the people who are contributing the reports than CNN, Fox News, and the New York Times. And, you know, it's possible that BP, when President Obama was taken to the Gulf, he was shown the most, you know, the areas that were the least affected, so he would have the least impact, you know, in understanding what's really going on. And I wouldn't put it past BP to have arranged that. But he cannot possibly ignore, I mean, there are news reports that are reporting the toxic rain now. It's on the news. And everybody's acting like, oh, we don't know what it is. I mean, come on, you guys. Fuel evaporates very rapidly. When you're pumping your gas, that smell you smell, that's evaporation. You can see it on FLIR, on infrared cameras, really, really clearly. Fuel evaporates and attaches itself to moisture droplets in the air, and then it gets carried into the clouds. If you go to pbs.org and you look at their counter, what appears to be the most extreme case scenario is we've passed 300 gallons of fuel leaked into the Gulf. I mean, that's 30 times more than the Exxon Valdez spill. So you're looking, and also oil evaporates. It evaporates very slowly, but it does evaporate. The Gulf region, with its very, very warm tropical waters, is a prime, you know, prime conditions to cause evaporation of fuels and oil. So when you're seeing oil fall down the rain all over the country, don't think that that's just, oh my God, I mean, that's just something that has nothing to do with it. And that is the attitude of our government. And you're talking, I mean, this could turn into one of the worst disasters we've ever seen. You know, we hear stories from people like Richard Hoagland that there might be, you know, the ocean floor may cave in and you may get a tsunami that could bury Miami. But when you're talking about 300 million gallons of fuel that's sitting in the ocean evaporating, you're talking about literally, you know, rains of fire coming down all over the central to eastern United States. And possibly some of those, you know, air currents could send some of the western United States.
Yeah, I agree with you there. What are you doing now? Are you in working on a new film, or what are you doing?
Well, I'm actually, you know, I'm doing a lot of things. I do a lot of advanced research on my harmonics, but I'm pitching a film called Hope for Humanity, that it goes into various, you know, quadrants or sectors of the humanities and looks at where our next generation could possibly take us. But, you know, America has come to the point where all great empires have found themselves faced with the collapse of the Roman Empire. I mean, I really believe we saw the collapse of the Soviet Union and the failing of Marxist-Leninist, looking at communism, a form of communism, I should say. It's not all communism. Communism comes from the word community or communism, meaning everyone being treated equal. And there are some great things about communism, and there are a lot of bad things about communism. And now America, which is a capitalist society, there are a lot of great things about capitalism. But now if capitalism has reached its end, and where they all fail, this, if you read Plato's Republic, one of the most incredible books anybody could read to understand politics and to understand humanities, is Plato's Republic. And you see where he points out the failings of democracy and the failings of a dictatorship. With a dictatorship, if you're lucky enough to get a good dictator, you can have a great government. A dictator who is not self-obsessed in making his people, work like slaves while he collects all of the wealth and spends all of the money on himself. And that's what you get in countries like Nigeria with, the oil families there, and taking all the wealth for themselves and leaving everybody nothing. You get the same thing in Mexico, where you have the richest man in the world right now is in Mexico, and all the people are dirt poor and trying to fight to get into American borders. And then, you have this greed problem, this problem of greed. In our country, we have central bankers. We have the bankers who own the Federal Reserve who are not even American. The Federal Reserve is not an American-owned bank, and there are millions of people who know this. But the problem, with greed is that I look at all the countries in the world, and greed, India, for example, a great example. I've been to India. There I was in India in 1996, on a Buddhist pilgrimage and met the Dalai Lama and, met a lot of Indian teachers. And these super wealthy Indian men are standing in front of me, and they said to me, what's it like, to be in America? And, what do you think of India? And I said, in America, we have greed. We have excessive wealth. We have people with so much money, they don't even know what to do with it, but they'd rather just see it all pile up. And we have poverty, just like you do. But the difference in our country is our greed is less. We have fantastic museums and universities and schools, and we have fairly clean cities and streets. I mean, fairly clean. When I say that, you really need to go to India to understand what I'm comparing it to. I mean, you can think of downtown Chicago or the Bronx in New York, but believe me, once you've been to New Delhi, you will know that that is paradise. You just don't understand that it's paradise, but it really is compared to how most people live on this planet. In our country, the greedy are exceedingly greedy. They have more money than even the greedy do in a lot of these other foreign countries, but some of them spend some of that money on museums and institutions and research facilities, and there is a lot of money that gets spent in America, and a lot of jobs are created in research, R&D in the medical fields and scientific fields and so on. But we do have too much greed here. But outside of America is our central bank. The Federal Reserve is not part of the United States, and they have robbed us since 1914 for the tune of trillions of dollars. And that is the biggest crime. That is probably the number one problem in this country that is most likely to cause its ultimate financial total collapse. And you look at oil. You look at all this oil that we need. I did a totally different study than Al Gore did on, he's looking at global warming. He's looking at the burning of fossil fuels. I'm looking at what causes people to drive so damn much. I look at what makes them get in the car and do 25,000 miles a year. When I was a kid growing up in the Bay Area in San Francisco and Modesto, California, my parents were lucky if in 10 years they did 100,000 miles on their car. Lucky if they drove that much. By 1970 and 1975, if you hit 100,000 miles on your car, it was amazing. And it would be more amazing if there were two cars in the garage in a single family. today, what has happened is we have let basic human necessities, food, shelter, and clothing, real estate, has cost us so much money, we've pretty much turned it into a life imprisonment sentence. A sentence so long, 30 to 40 years, that there's no job security in the country. There's no possibility that someone can guarantee that kind of an economy in their family for 30 to 40 years.
Hey, David?
Yeah.
Well, back to what you were saying there about Al Gore, have you studied any of John Moore's information? He's got a DVD out entitled Global Warming, What the Government Isn't Telling You.
Mm-hmm.
Have you checked it out?
I'm not a person who's going to believe or not believe in global warming. I'm a person who believes in clean air. I'm a person who believes in clean water. I'm a person who has personally planted over 1.3 million trees in 22 years, breaking my back, climbing up in mountains, and mm-hmm. studying science with my face covered in mud on my days off, you know, and after work. I'm a person who believes in clean air. So the debate on whether global warming is man-made or whether it's natural, I actually sit on the side that it is contributed by man and by the burning of fossil fuels. But I'm not a person who sits there and says, well, let's just keep burning oil, because look what the cost of oil is. You know, the Gulf oil crisis is beckoning us with that cost. But my point against Al Gore is this. You didn't look at what caused us to drive our cars so much, why a woman and a man had to work to raise a family, two cars driving, and then the cost of mortgages and interest and bank, you know, corruption is escalating. We have to drive so damn much now, we can't sit still to pay our freaking bills. So the motor that's causing us to drive so much is responsible for what's happening in the Gulf, and that's the bankers. The bankers who put the price on everything and make everything unattainable, we grow enough food to feed the world three times over. We have enough timber and stone and rock to build new homes for everybody. We got labor sitting around right now that could build homes, and it's just sitting there collecting unemployment insurance. We can build a super country if we get rid of this idea that there's this thing called debt. And if we get rid of this idea that a home has to be a 30-year life sentence, we can change it all. And that's the film I'm editing now, Hope for Humanity.
Well, I was just wondering if you had seen the John Moore DVD, because he's been a private investigator for 40 years. He knows how to look for evidence and interview witnesses. And he says that the global warming thing is really it's a lie. It's a cover for what's really happening, and that's this inbound passage of this Planet X object, which has already been causing climate change on the other planets in our solar system as it comes in.
Well, yeah, and I've looked at a lot of that stuff, and it's very possible that Nibiru is coming, and that could explain for the sudden, you know, the increase in UFO sightings. You know, I've been a long time researcher in the field of ufology, and I've had my own experience of seeing a flying saucer up close in 1968 in Berkeley, California. So, you know, using the theory that global warming may not be man-made to say that, well, we can just keep burning fossil fuels. You see, that's the mentality I'm against. But I'm not against the possibility that a lot of it has other causes. But I don't believe in burning fossil fuels eternally and destroying our rivers, lakes, and streams and acid rain and now toxic rain.
I seen something on the internet about your petition to become an astronaut or something. What was that about?
Oh, yeah, that was an attempt I made because there were so many debates that I opened up with photography from NASA, from the space shuttle, of anomalous UFO phenomena on space shuttle missions that were captured on video cameras that can see into the invisible ultraviolet. And there were so many Americans who believed that that deserved a true investigation. And because NASA was not forthcoming, I wanted to create a petition to see if enough people wanted me to get on the space shuttle myself to go up there and look for myself and see what's really going on up there. And I never really believed that NASA would put me on the space shuttle. And now we're seeing the end of the space shuttle program, so it's not likely to happen.
You know, it's interesting, in the course of this research I've been doing, I'm sort of John Moore's research associate under this Planet X thing, and NASA actually awarded a contract to an outside vendor, Prudential, like 3 years ago, for NASA to start relocating their own people. And, well, we have a lot of NASA facilities along the Gulf Coast, and there, you know, there's only two shuttle missions planned. Maybe this is because maybe most of Florida is going to be underwater soon. They can't launch from the Kennedy Space Center anymore.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, we're going to be coming into a break here, David, and in about a minute or so, I'll just patch into the stream while the break's going on. And after we come out of the break, I'd like to talk more about this NASA relocating their own people. Could you just comment on that quick before we go into the break?
What do you mean by NASA relocating? You mean the closing down of the space shuttle program?
Well, NASA itself as an agency had awarded a contract to Prudential Relocation Services to start moving their own people. I did a FOIA request to NASA, and I really didn't learn much about who these employees exactly are, but it would probably be essential personnel that they need to get moved in case there's tsunamis or whatever. That's just what I'm thinking.
Mm-hmm. I don't know, because I don't know enough about that. I mean, all I know now is it's the end of the space shuttle program, and I think that's part of where we bought into these bankers, making us believe that we owe them all of our money. And who are they? And we don't have the talent, the steel, the metal, you know, the electricians and everything to build a space program. I mean, I firmly believe our government possesses I don't think Obama is so brilliant that he's canceling the space program because he wants to see people bring that technology to our light. I really don't believe that.
We're coming in the break, David. Hey, we'll be back maybe in about 2 or 3 minutes here. Yeah, after the break, I'd like to talk about Ben Rich. There's a lot of people that haven't heard about that guy. We'll be back to listen to Light of Day and Orion Talk Radio Network. We're live Saturday night, July 10th. We'll be back with David Cerita. Stay tuned, folks. Hello, folks. Welcome back to the Light of Day, coming to you live on the Orion Talk Radio Network. We're live Saturday night, July 10th, 2010. We have on the line David Cerita calling from Sedona, Arizona. I'm down in Tucson, Arizona, by the way, David. I still have you on mute, though. I did need to plug three more shows here. I found at the bottom of the hour here when we brought David on that I had accidentally forgot to unmute my microphone on the Skype. So I need to plug these three shows quick that'll be starting on Orion next weekend. John DiNardo, my co-host for my show, he'll be starting his show next Sunday night at 9 p.m. Eastern Time. And then we have a guy named Darren, and his show is called The Front. That starts next Saturday afternoon at 2 p.m. Eastern Time. And the Stand Up America show with Carrie Patan starts next Sunday night at 3 p.m. Eastern Time. So you folks might want to check them other shows out on Orion here. Anyway, we're going to bring David Cerita back on the line. And David, I wanted to talk to you here about the Space Shuttle Columbia disaster over Texas from 7 years ago. When I was actually doing past radio shows on other networks, I was talking about how the Shuttle Columbia had been brought down by a directed energy weapon. Can you tell our folks more about that, please?
Yeah, let me just pull that file up. I mean, this is a story that is really, you know, amazing that happened in You know, what year are we talking about here?
This was early 2003, and when I did past shows, I actually read some stuff about that, and it's interesting that the post-Shuttle Columbia investigation accident panel they appointed, some of these people, after I did some digging, I found out were somehow related to facilities where they had done testing with directed energy type weapons.
Wow.
So I'm pretty much on the same page with you there about some type of energy weapon being used to bring the shuttle down.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Well, I mean, I found proof of that, and I found extensive proof of that. And that was, which you're looking at, February 1st, 2003. What started to happen was in the San Francisco Chronicle newspaper, there were reports of an amateur photographer who was taking still photographs consecutively, and he gets this purple incoming streak that corrects and turns almost 90 degrees to chase after the space shuttle. And the shuttle, you know, apparently all data on the space shuttle was lost at, let's see, 8 a.m. February 1st, 2003. It was 207,000 feet above the Earth doing Mach 18, or about 12,500 miles an hour, when it broke apart. But so you imagine the speed that it's going. This is the first thing. And you see, I'm looking at the original photographs now that have never been publicly posted because of the owner of the photographs, obviously being warned or bought out by the military to be silent about it. But it says in the San Francisco Chronicle that the digital image is one of five snapped by the shuttle bus at roughly 5:53 a.m. Saturday as sensors on the doomed orbiter began showing the first indications of trouble. 7 minutes later, the craft broke up in flames over Texas. Now, the problem is because of the speed of the shuttle at 12,500 miles an hour, and you see this incoming corkscrew kind of what appears to be some type of ammunition or missile. When you compare that against the speed of almost all of our missiles, nothing can travel at, you know, even more than that speed, let alone it's probably going at least double that to chase the space shuttle and actually catch up to it and eventually hit it, target it, and explode. Now, that's as far as the public knows about the speed and the knowledge of most of our missiles. We don't have anything that can go anywhere near that. The only missiles that we have that can do that are travel at speeds that even approach that are ICBMs, intercontinental ballistic nuclear warheads. But the problem with this guy is it course corrects at 90 degrees, and the G-forces at speed on a 90-degree turn would destroy virtually almost any aircraft that we know today. There's no airplanes or there's nothing that can do that. And then a beam or a pulse weapon would travel at the speed of light, so you wouldn't even see it. So this is clearly a munition that is coming from space that is traveling far faster than any that we can possibly know.
I did want to point out, David, there's a good website I've seen out there. About, they get more details about this. It's called ColumbiaSacrifice.com, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And I also wanted to point this out. We don't need to get into a verbal debate about it, but I am of the firm opinion that the World Trade Center towers in New York City were brought down by directed energy weapons on 9/11, and there's a former highly credentialed scientist in South Carolina by the name of Dr. Judy Wood. I've helped her get on to at least 12 or 13 radio shows since I learned about her back in late 2008, and she also revealed that there was a hurricane parked outside New York City on the morning of 9/11, and this hurricane, which is called Hurricane Aaron, acted like a super-sized Tesla coil to create some of the effects needed that were seen, like upside-down cars that looked brand new, and just weird phenomena that she's tied in with John Hutchinson, a scientist up in Canada, who's reverse-engineered Nikola Tesla's technology sort of on a small scale, but it's a long story, but that I also believe that directed energy weapon down in 9/11.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of weapons that we have that are way beyond anything the public has access to, and when you understand how UFO and anti-gravity technology works, and you apply that to missiles, munitions, and all sorts of things, unimaginable things are possible. But with the Space Shuttle Columbia incident, what ends up happening is I get letters from MIT physicists about my, presentation, that's a PDF color presentation showing the photographs from the amateur photographer. And, Tammy Jernigan, this former Space Shuttle astronaut, was, told the San Francisco Chronicle that what you're seeing on the photograph is just super lightning and it's just a strange phenomenon in space. And then she later said that it was just an artifact of the guy's camera, of his own digital camera. Well, this is where it gets this is where you really see that NASA is doing a smokescreen, because this MIT physicist gets me emails from NASA and Air Force officials who've never seen the amateur photographer's photographs, and they want to get them from me. And they show me photographs that were taken from the Air Force that show the same purple incoming corkscrewing wave that chases after the space shuttle and hits it on their camera. So there's no way it's an artifact of this guy's camera, because it showed up on the Air Force cameras. And so they're all wondering, why haven't they seen, because they're doing an investigation on it at the Air Force, because obviously all of the Air Force cameras and video cameras were watching the space shuttle coming in. So there's a lot of different corroborating independent photography of the event. The question now is, everybody knows it happened. Everybody that I, have access to in the Air Force has photographic evidence that it really did happen. It was really struck by an unknown. And so then once you eliminate all of the known, the speeds of them, there's no way it's not possible that it's what we're looking at.
What would have been the purpose of sacrificing this particular shuttle flight by the elite? You think they is this just some type of sacrifice, or what do you think?
Mm-hmm. Well, why did they do it? You have to think of what was on the payload on that shuttle. Was it Russian? Was it Chinese? Was it extraterrestrial that actually shot it down? I mean, the shuttle is traveling, it's coming in at about 12,500 miles an hour. So again, the only missiles, the Minuteman missile can do 15,000 miles an hour. So could it have been a Minuteman missile? I don't think a Minuteman missile could turn at 90 degrees at that speed. A Trident missile, 18,000 miles an hour. I mean, definitely fast enough, but we don't have Trident missiles out in space as far as we know, right? I mean, we have satellites out there. We have over 100 satellites out there. Some of them are 35,000 miles away from the Earth, but I really doubt they're carrying Trident missiles, and they got fired at the space shuttle. I don't, that's what happened. But we do know it didn't come from the ground going up. It came from space coming down. It came from higher and further out. You can see it in the photographs and the shuttle Columbia. So the question is, what is it? It's definitely, I really doubt it's a missile, because a missile cannot course correct. Not at that speed. Just don't believe.
I tend to agree with you there. So you don't really know why they would have sacrificed that shuttle flight.
Well, you have to know what's on the payload. And the payload, the military parts of the payloads in the shuttle are all classified. So we don't know what was on that. I've looked in the records. There are the experiments that are known to the public can have access to that they're working on in that. But what the military payloads were, I don't know.
Well, if memory serves me correct, this was the first Israeli-born astronaut on that flight, plus most of the shuttle disintegrated over Palestine, Texas, correct?
Mm-hmm. Well, things like that, I don't think it's an anti-Semitic issue. I really don't believe it's anything like that. They wouldn't destroy a space shuttle just to kill an astronaut. I don't think that's possible. Unless you can prove that scientist was doing something that was a threat to national security, and a very, very serious threat to national security. And scientists are the most potentially dangerous people we have, because there are some of them that are so brilliant that they can create weapons that are truly a threat to national security. But if that were happening, you would think they would have assassinated him on Earth instead of killing all these other astronauts with him. I think it's possible it was extraterrestrial, I think it's possible that we were going to weaponize space, and we had some intentions to deal with the UFO phenomena that's been happening on a lot of shuttle missions. You know, there we've had numerous Russian astronauts admit that there are UFOs visiting the space station and visiting the cosmonauts, and we've had a few American astronauts, like Story Musgrave, give us clues that they're seeing things out there they can't explain.
Well, you know, we have this former statement by the former head of the Lockheed Skunk Works project, Ben Rich. He says, anything you right. can imagine, we've already done. We've been to the stars, done this, done that. You know, I got doing some digging on that. I tried to find an actual, like an audio of him giving that presentation, and I can't find any audio on that. Do you have a copy of it?
Yeah, what Ben Rich said is, we already have the technology to send E.T. back home. And so that means we already have E.T., and we already reverse engineered the technology, and we can already send him back home. And he was the former head of Lockheed Skunk Works, and he said that at a UCLA alumni speech, and it was Jan Harzan, who is the chapter head of MUFON for Orange County, who was the witness to him saying that. But nobody had, I don't believe there's a recording of the speech.
Yeah, I've been unsuccessful at trying to find it, but it sure would be nice to obtain a copy of that speech.
But I personally got interviews with Lockheed Martin senior scientist Boyd Bushman, and they're in my film From Here to Andromeda, and a new UFO DVD I'm going to be working on in the next year. And I've gotten him to admit everything about UFOs, the aliens at Roswell, and all of that sort of, and the weapon we used to shoot down the extraterrestrial craft and all those sort of things.
And who is Boyd?
Boyd is a senior research scientist. He spent 20 years at Lockheed Martin, and he's still a consultant there today. He's retired, and he's a brilliant, brilliant engineer and scientist. And he worked for Howard Hughes, Texas Instruments. He built the Stinger missile for General Dynamics. General Dynamics is no longer around, but he literally discovered heat-sinking missiles, infrared heat-sinking missiles. And he's the inventor of Red Eye. And so Boyd has worked on everything from weapons, very, very advanced weapon systems, to propulsion systems for missiles and aircraft. And 20 years at Lockheed Martin. And you can see his name on the U.S. Patent and Trademark Office website. Just search Boyd Bushman, and you can see all these Lockheed patents all come up. And he has admitted everything about Roswell. It's all true. So all of it's true.
Well, speaking of Lockheed, I think it's actually you I heard mention on the Coast to Coast radio show that these massive UFO sightings that were seen over Phoenix and down there in Texas somewhere, you said these were actually near Lockheed facilities?
Well, yeah. I mean, from my relationship with Boyd, I asked him about Stephenville UFO. And you know, Lockheed is in Texas. They have facilities all over the country, but that's their headquarters. They have huge facilities in Texas. And they have one not far from Stephenville, and they make, you know, the F-22 Raptor and the F-35 And, you know, the thing is when you see the eyewitness reports from Stephenville, which were a mile-wide craft, I mean, this one farmer is looking up above the tree line, and he couldn't see the ends of this thing. It's being escorted by Lockheed fighter jets, and they're not shooting at it. And from Boyd, I know the weapon we use is so advanced to shoot down saucers that you would think that if we believed it was extraterrestrial, we would have shot it down. No, instead, according to radar reports, the Stephenville UFO flew right over Crawford Ranch and perfect eye view of the president of the United States at that time, George Walker Bush. And so it was obviously a flyby, you know, designed for him to see. So the extraterrestrial craft didn't fire the Lockheed fighter jets and vice versa. So we know it's definitely supposed to be there. It is not an alien craft, although most Americans can't believe we have something that large, and I've confirmed that from my source at Lockheed. But then the giant triangles over Phoenix, they stopped over Goodyear, Arizona, and if you look on your Google map, you'll see a Lockheed facility right underneath Goodyear, Arizona. So I believe the reason it stopped there is it was making, you know, radio communications down to the base down below, and then, you know, they eventually took off. That UFO was first seen in northern Arizona, which now Boyd Bushman at Lockheed also told me that we moved Area 51 to Tooele, Utah, and that's where the first sightings of the Phoenix craft, the Big Phoenix Mile Wide Triangle, were. They came from Utah down through northern Arizona and down in over Prescott and Highway 17 going into Phoenix and passing by Sedona and going into Phoenix. So I think that was probably the base where those large triangles are kept, is somewhere out in Utah.
Okay. Yeah, I was just going to say, I recall the Art Bell Show when that all happened back in 97, that these were originally seen somewhere in Nevada or Utah before they came into Arizona. My other question I have for you is, what are your thoughts about this NASA using Project Bluebeam or some type of technology to stage a faked extraterrestrial event or UFO flyover here in the upcoming future?
I've read a little bit about Bluebeam on their website, and, you know, again, I mean, any of these things are possible. They're possible because we have the technology. You know, whether, you know, you need to create a fake invasion with holographic projections of flying saucers and or whatnot, or if Bluebeam is really about, you know, creating a stage where people are going to be afraid of the evacuation. The evacuation is an idea that a group of enlightened extraterrestrials are going to come and remove, you know, up to 1 million people off the planet before all hell breaks loose down here, so that they can archive or arc the human species and a lot of the animal and mammal species and then bring them back after the disaster happens. Some think that event is the rapture in the Bible. That's really Jesus and his angels and their ships are coming to take people off the planet. So Bluebeam is supposed to be a decoy. It's a military-made event to look like that, so that when it happens and you find out it was all fake, when the real one happens, you don't, you know, don't go, because they want to keep you trapped here. And there are people who believe that movies like Fire in the Sky with Travis Walton and the gray aliens and all the evil abductions that they do are just deep, deep CIA programs and mutated humans that are used to scare everybody from the real evacuation, the angelic extraterrestrials. So that when they come, we're all so afraid of the beams of light because we think we're going to be tortured. And that way, you know, the dark forces can keep us trapped on Earth. Meanwhile, Earth is becoming more and more of a living hell because of, right now, it's pretty obvious British Petroleum is going to destroy, you know, at least half of the United States, you know, from what we can see.
Have you seen the movies Knowing and 2012? And are you think they're trying to tell us something? Because I know in the movie Knowing that came out last year, they actually showed an oil rig exploding in the Gulf of Mexico.
Right. I mean, that gives you the idea that it could have been planned. I mean, this could have been, and these executives who work in these studios are giving us a little clue that this was no accident. This was a planned event. I mean, you look at the 60 Minutes interview with the oil rig worker, one of the only survivors, or maybe the only survivor. I listened to his interview, and these guys are, you know, they know their job. They know that they were going to, the well was going to break. They knew that there was going to be an eruption because they had a broken, you know, drill head. And the BP executives on the phone said, keep drilling. And these guys are like, well, it's not going to work. This thing's going to blow up. And they were given the orders to keep drilling. So that is very clear from the 60 Minutes interview that they wanted this accident to happen. And that would mean it was planned well in advance.
Well, I think 9/11 was clearly planned, too, because they had that TV show on Fox called The Lone Gunman 6 months before 9/11.
And right, I saw that. And I know Dean Heglin, who was in that.
Oh, wow.
And from The X-Files. And he's a friend of mine, and I asked him about that too, and everyone's baffled. Yeah, the planes were controlled by, taken over, you know, by remote control and drove into the World Trade Center. So that was on a TV show before it happened, and so was, you know, in the movie Knowing. But the deeper part of knowing is a form of evacuation. It's children who are taken off the planet and archived, and they get to live in another star system until they're, you know, eventually brought back to a more stable Earth environment.
What do you think about the aspect of the solar scorching that you think that's going to be caused as Planet X comes past us, or?
Well, I mean, if Planet X really gets close enough to the solar system, it's going to affect the orbits of everything because of its gravity and its mass. So, but I would think that they would see it coming far in advance of it arriving, because it's a planet that you know, you couldn't miss it. But amateur astronomers, I mean, you know, I have a pretty good telescope, but am I good enough on my amateur telescope to see Planet X? No, I'm not good enough.
Well, it has to be adopted with infrared or ultraviolet optics, for one thing. And another thing, Professor Jim McCanney has stated that the professional astronomical community is under direct orders not to tell the public about an impending disaster from outside our planet. So,
well, one of the things you can see in the outer planets, I mean, look what just happened on Saturn. We saw on Jupiter a new stripe appeared. The stripe had changed, and then we saw an impactor that went in. This bright ball of light went in, and it didn't leave an explosion behind.
Oh, no. What happened, David, was that famous southern equatorial band on Jupiter disappeared.
Right. And then there was an incoming object that didn't leave an explosion. And I can't remember whether that was Saturn or Jupiter, because when I was looking at it, and all these astronomers are waiting for the explosion from the ripple, just like the Shoemaker-Levy 9 comets, and there was none. So what was it? Was it a giant mothership that went in, you know, for a visit? But when you see changes in the planets in the solar system and that are drastic, like we saw, then that is an indicator that something is causing it, and that is, you know, more, you know, building the case for Planet X.
Well, I clearly know what you're talking about. It was a fireball that MSNBC reported slammed into Jupiter early last month, and to some of us Planet X researchers, we believe Planet X is between the main asteroid belt and Jupiter, and what may be happening is Planet X is dislodging asteroids as it comes, pierces the ecliptic table as it comes in up from the south. And there was also a fireball that went over, it was either Georgia or Alabama, or middle part of May, and NASA confirmed that rock had come from the asteroid belt, and they're wanting citizens to help them find it. But David, I hate to do it, but the show is done. The music's coming on. I really appreciate you coming on. And
all right.
You folks can check.
Keep sending me those emails. They're very interesting.
Well, sure. We'll do, John. David, thanks for coming on. And good night, folks. Thanks for listening to The Light of Day. We'll be back next weekend. Same channel, same time. Good night.
Orion Talk Radio Network is here. The First Amendment of the Constitution grants us freedom of speech. That's the freedom to express our views and opinions without censorship. If you listen to mainstream radio at all, you'll notice that free speech is pretty hard to find these days, with just a handful of networks offering programs that dare to discuss topics and issues that have a profound impact on our daily lives. The mainstream media simply lies by omission and distortion of the facts. The Orion Talk Radio Network is committed to bringing you entertaining and thought-provoking programming that dares to tell the truth. And you can help us as we grow our network. If you think you have what it takes to host a show, you know of someone interested in hosting a show, or any other suggestions, comments, or questions, please drop us an email at OrionTalkRadio@gmail.com. That's OrionTalkRadio@gmail.com. And thank you for listening to the Orion Talk Radio Network. The Big Shot of the Milliwatt. This is Micro 1650 AM, Tonawanda, New York.
It's time to get serious.